You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Excuse me, what is this?
Sweet and low?
No. This is not sweet and low, this is equal. Blue packet. Sweet and low is pink. See? Equal blue, sweet and low pink. It's not the same thing, is it?
Well, I think they both contain the same...
What equal contains is not my concern here. I don't care if it has fucking fairy dust in it.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got nerves!
Make love in the hammock!
Good.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 53 for the 27th of August, 2011. And I know that's just confusing, so let me help explain that just a little bit. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined in studio by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
Trying to get a better seat so we look a little bit more symmetrical. We're looking a bit... There we go.
There we go. Okay.
Stop.
How are you, Josh? Wait a minute. We seem to be a man down here. Sorry, he's here so often that I've completely lost track of the fact that
Richard... I don't know what to do with my arms anymore.
We have space. Richard couldn't join us this week. He's gone. I think it's the opening of the Korean Film Festival or something.
Yes.
So yeah. All right. So this week we renumbered the podcast. So for those who are going 53, what the hell are you talking about? When we started Film Actually, it was just a split off from the Geek Actually show. And so we kept continuity on numbers. But last week, we didn't do a Geek Actually show, which threw our numbers out anyway. And because it threw our numbers out and we are 53 episodes into Film Actually, I thought, you know what? Film Actually deserves to have its numbers back.
Yeah.
It deserves to have its own numbers back.
Yeah.
So... like good comic book tradition, we're just going to start numbering it again for no apparent reason. And so from this point onwards, we are going with its original numbering. Last week's episode was 144, or officially the 52nd episode. So this week is episode 53. And if you really want to get persnickety about it, the original numbering was episode 145. Mm. Okay. But from now on, we're going to be numbering the episodes by their proper number. All right. With that being said, welcome to Film Actually, guys. This is the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. And this week we have a pair of reviews. Josh and I are going to review Horrible Bosses. And I'm going to give you a little heads up on a little Irish film called The Guard. Josh hasn't had a chance to see it yet, but he's going to, because this film is great, and we'll have a talk about that in a minute. We also have a brand new list of five. Now, this list of five comes to us from a listener, and I thought this was such a good idea that we would do it. This comes from listener Zed, who basically said, "What are there films where you would just watch them no matter what? Because of the actor, the actress, the director, whatever it might be." And I thought, what a great idea. So we've kind of opened this list up, and we've made it very, very open slather. And so all we've called this list is five actors, actresses, or directors that we would watch no matter what they did. Okay.
Exactly.
So it can be whether it's the actor or it's the director. Mine all happen to be directors because I'm kind of director focused, but you know, whatever. We'll see how
we
go.
Well, we have two very different lists then.
There we go. And that's always a good thing. We do normally go out live. You can watch Film Actually every Saturday. We try and start about 1:30 today. We're half an hour out of that schedule, but
hooray.
But we did have a guest in who brought an AR drone in. If you want to find out more about that, listen to our Geek Actually show, which was kind of fun. We did a live demonstration of the AR drone here in the studio. Now, announcement time. We do have to do a quick announcement, which is we are in the process of trying to move the studio. So things are going to be a little bit rough around the edges here for the next couple of weeks. And we've already said on the Geek Actually show that we're suspending Geek Actually for the next 2 or 3 weeks. But Film Actually will continue on, but it won't be live. So we do talk about the fact that you can watch us live, and we do have a live chat room today. But for the next 2 or 3 weeks, we won't be live. We'll be pre-recording the show whenever we get the chance to.
Yeah.
And we'll still try and get them out onto the feed every Sunday or Monday as usual. But we might be recording these things on a Thursday. Thursday night or a Saturday evening or a Sunday, whenever we can basically fit it in, because of everything that's going on. We just, everything is kind of chaotic for the next couple of weeks. So bear with us. We will have stuff on the feed for you, though. All right? Because there's just too many films coming out. We still have to review. And the website will continue on. Now, I just want to apologize. The website has had very little put on it over this last week. There was a great review by Josh for Conan, which got a lot of hits, by the way. But I've been sick all week, as you know, from last week. I said I was starting to feel a bit sick, and this week
I actually felt bad because the Conan the movie started following me on Twitter. I'm like, no, you don't want to do that. You haven't read my review yet.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah.
But what have we been watching this week, Josh?
What have we been watching? Well, I'm still slugging through Monster, which has actually creeped back up. You remember last time I said I was a little bit worried in episode 20 that things were starting to get a bit average, but it turns out that it was just a momentary, filler a couple of episodes or something. The show has picked up and continued to drive into even more insanity. I'm loving the fact that, like I was saying, it's very HBO, and the fact that its side characters are starting to get a lot more storyline behind them. So you're starting to get a lot more depth to these characters, and some of the side characters are insane, and it works really well towards the series. I also sat down and rewatched last night The Legend of Drunken Master, which is...
I haven't seen that in years.
Is absolutely dynamite movie.
I love that film that I saw.
It's my continuation of my introduction for my girlfriend, my wonderful girlfriend, Celine, in the traditional show-style fashion. I'm showing her that Jackie Chan is more than just a pudgy one-hit wonder.
Yep.
This man at one stage was the defining...
Oh, absolutely.
The defining man in Kung Fu.
Late 70s, mid 80s, man couldn't be touched.
He exactly. So I'm sort of letting this out in small bits and showing her some of the awesomeness that he had, which is fantastic. And I watched something else this week, but I don't remember it. Go, Dave.
All right. This week, I think the biggest thing I saw this week, I mean, I've seen a lot of films as usual. Mm. I rewatched Fast Five again this week, which I really enjoyed. Again, it came out on Blu-ray this week.
Yeah, yeah.
Really enjoyed that. But the big film that I saw this week, I think, was I saw Red State.
Yeah.
And it is brilliant.
Did I mention I hate you?
We are seeing it again. So Josh will see it in September. It's opening here in Australia finally in October. Yep. I got a chance to see it. I got plus one to somebody else. I couldn't get on that list, but I got plus one. And I loved it. I actually thought, and we've talked about Red State a lot on this show, we will review it properly when the film comes out. But just my first impressions are this is, if you didn't know Kevin Smith directed this film, you would never know it was Kevin Smith.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the most assured thing he's ever directed. Mm. The dialogue is absolutely top-notch, which is a trademark of his anyway, so that's fine. But where it doesn't feel like a Kevin Smith film is this film is so disciplined as filmmaking goes.
Really?
And the editing is so tight. This thing is like a drum. You could bounce a coin off this thing.
Wow.
You know? It is really good. And Michael Parks is... phenomenal. I mean,
he's everything we thought he was.
He's everything you thought he was. Yeah, it is a really good film. It's really interesting because it actually doesn't have much of a story.
Mm.
It's not about the story. It's about just this sequence of events that unfold over the course of literally a night and a day. So it's, and he keeps referring to it as a horror film. I wouldn't say it's a horror film. Some of the stuff in it is kind of horrific, but it's not a horror film. It is more of a thriller / action film.
Mm.
And literally a good portion of this film is just a gunfight.
Mm.
It's really good. It is really worth having a look at. Looks magnificent, all shot on reds. And it's just got this brown, kind of washed out look to it and everything.
Really Southern kind of.
Really Southern, really hot looking. It really doesn't feel like Kevin Smith is always kind of colorful, except for his black and white stuff, of course. But
even that was kind of, you could almost call it colorful. It's kind of animated.
Yeah, very animated. Yeah. This is very muted. It's as I say, the word here is restrained, and it's very un-Kevin Smith, and I applaud him for it. Nice. I'm kind of sad that when he's finally really demonstrated a real flair as a director, now he retires.
Well, look, we've talked about this before, and I mean, I'm under the understanding that if you truly love something, which he does, even if he wants to try and pretend he doesn't, if you really truly love something, then you will return to it. And it's just like, I believe he will end up doing at least a few more movies here and there. But look, I mean, all for him. I mean, production is an important thing as well, and it'll be interesting to see what comes out under his hand, you know what I mean? And sort of, look, let's see where he goes with that.
Yeah, he's still got one more film under his belt, and we've actually heard over the course of the last couple of weeks that Hit Somebody will actually now be two films.
Mm.
So it looks like it's grown to the point where...
I reckon it's grown because he's got a great thing from Red State, so he's believing in himself.
And so he basically split it into two films because it's just, the story is huge.
Yeah,
and funny thing is, though, I'm not as excited about Hit Somebody because I'm just not a hockey fan. And so for me, it's not as exciting. Red State is something where I look at it and go, wow, you had a statement to make and you've made that statement with flair, you know? Well, we're seeing when it comes out in October, everybody go see this film and we will review it in detail. Then we'll probably talk a little bit more about it before then as well, once Josh has had a chance to see it. It is well worth watching. So that's the big one, I think, for me. All right, so let's move on to our first feature film, I guess, which is Horrible Bosses. Now, Horrible Bosses is directed by Seth Gordon and written by Michael Markowitz, John Francis Daly, and Jonathan Goldstein. It stars Jason Bateman, Charlie Day, Jason Sudeikis, Kevin Spacey, Colin Farrell, Jennifer Aniston, and Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
Now, this source comes straight from Warner Brothers, so if it's a little bit wordy, that's because they always tend to be a little bit wordy when they come straight from the source. For Nick, Kurt, and Dale, the only thing that would make the daily grind more tolerable would be to grind their intolerable bosses into dust. Quitting is not an option, so with the benefit of a few too many drinks and some dubious advice from a hustling ex-con, the three friends devise a convoluted and seemingly foolproof plan to rid themselves of their respective employers permanently. There's only one problem. Even the best laid plans are only as foolproof as the brains behind them. Source Warner Brothers. All right, so that's the plot synopsis for Horrible Bosses. By the way, I just wanted to stress, the opening clip that you heard for this episode is actually Kevin Spacey and Frank Whaley, and that's a film called Swimming with Sharks. And the character that Kevin Spacey plays in Horrible Bosses is almost like the godchild of the character he played in Swimming with Sharks. No matter how horrible he is in Horrible Bosses, he is 10 times worse in Swimming with Sharks. And if you haven't seen it, it's well worth having a look at. But yes, he makes it hard to watch in places. He is just the worst boss in history. All right, so here's the trailer. This is the Red Band trailer for Horrible Bosses. We do carry an explicit tag, I will remind people. So here is the Red Band for Horrible Bosses.
I think I can help you, boys.
Are you a businessman?
Motherfucker Jones.
Your first name is Motherfucker?
My real name is Dean.
Dean Jones. That's the same name of the actor Herbie Ludlum.
Yeah, he's not gonna know that.
I know who he is, bitch. I can't walk around this fucking neighborhood with that Disney-ass name.
We each have a boss.
You're my bitch.
Yo, dickwall!
You're gonna give me that dong, Dale.
It would be best if those bosses maybe weren't
around. No longer around anymore.
You know?
You want one?
Nothing for you?
It's 8:15 in the morning. I'm now an alcoholic.
The only reason I took one because I thought you were going to have one.
So you took one because you thought I was going to have one?
I was just trying to be polite.
So what? If I was going to put my balls in honey and shaved coconut, you'd do that too?
Your dad made the choice to dispose of our chemical waste responsibly.
Bolivian said they'd do it for a third of the price.
No, you can't go to them.
Why? Because they're going to endanger thousands of local residents.
Oh, I give a fuck. Some local tribesman gets cancer. Cry me a fucking river.
Julian's gone fucking batshit crazy. She took a bunch of photographs of me.
You did all this while I was unconscious?
Mm-hmm, yep.
You're a raper and you raped me. That's a rape!
Just relax there, Jodie Foster. Your dick wasn't even hard.
That does not give me any relief.
We all have clear motives for killing our bosses.
Why don't you kill each other's bosses?
Right, I'm doing Pellet. You're going to do Harkin and you're going to get some intel from Julia, right?
See you on the other side.
It is on my Donkey Kong.
Y'all motherfuckers crazy.
It was some failure, boss. She makes herself a little snack, a popsicle, a banana, and finally, a hot dog.
So you took the penis foods as an invitation to fuck her?
No, I took her invitation to fuck her as an invitation to fuck her.
Ow! What are you... Ow!
Get the car!
You
know
we got a hitman online.
Wait, what's this for? Wouldn't want to leave a stain now, would we?
Your ad said you do wet work.
I urinate on other men for money. Why else do you think my ad was in the men seeking men section?
You fucking idiot.
Could you be dumber?
We are men looking for a man!
There ain't no rest for the
It reflects poorly on me that you're my friend.
You know what's going on in there?
Yeah, let's just go.
That was almost all over us.
All right, so they are men seeking a man. That's absolutely true.
Yeah, sure, why not?
All right, Josh, what did you think of Horrible Bosses?
Look, I mean, comedy is never my you know, standard, and the longer I spend with this film in my mind, the more I kind of realize that it's a very stock standard kind of comedy film that we've been doing for years, which is that you get funny people at the time. So you get people that are really famously funny and you give them their standard concept of what they are funny-wise.
Right.
And then you build a film around it. And that's fine. That's essentially what they've done here. And, like, I mean, some of my favorite comedies are like this, which are just those that you know what you're going to get. When you watch Eddie Murphy in an Eddie Murphy movie, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get Eddie Murphy. And that's cool. We still go and see it because these guys have found something that is funny and they can do it universally in any situation. And, look, I mean, Jason Bateman is playing Jason Bateman, and Charlie Day is playing Charlie Day. Day, and Sadek is, I don't even know who he is.
He's from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, I know, but yeah.
I'm not familiar with his work until now. So.
Yeah, look,
and I quite like him. I think
exactly. All three of them work well in this film, and the story is one of those. It's a universally funny concept because we've all had that boss.
But let's be honest here. The three bosses.
Yeah.
Are the comic gold here?
Oh, absolutely. And this is what I'm saying. It's like they've found a concept which anyone can find funny. Everyone's had that boss. Everyone's had someone that they just wish. If they weren't there, life would be easier. Yeah. Like, these people make their life a living hell. So it's like, essentially, it's a funny concept. And then to find these people in the roles, and I mean, they've pretty much reorganized, what's his name, the guy that we saw at the start,
Kevin Spacey,
to play that role again.
Yeah.
Jennifer Aniston has been given a chance to finally play what we all wanted her to play, because the times when she is the funniest is when she's stepping outside that I'm the good girl and actually doing something, you know, that, you know, is slightly seedy or whatever. To get her to throw it to the wind and just R18 the shit out of that is fucking great. She is hilarious in this. I hate Jennifer Aniston, but in this, she is just absolutely unstoffable.
It's like that interview scene where she's doing the interview with him and she's wearing nothing but the medical jacket.
Yeah.
And basically she's naked underneath it. And all the way through it, he's like, but she's going, so if there's anything inappropriate, you let me know. And he's going, this would be inappropriate.
Yeah. And look, oh, that's great. And we cannot overlook Colin Farrell doing such a good job as like a heavy cokehead.
Especially in the same week that we saw Fright Night.
This is exactly what I was going to say. You watch him in Fright Night and he's ripped and he's buff and he's like super intensely like on an
sexual
attraction.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like he is charged with it. And he has this primal nature to him. And then you see him in this and it's like bad hair toupee dude. And just exactly. And just like, he is so great. In fact, my favorite lines are actually stick around after the credits, because it's got him doing like this 1 second monologue at like a pharmacy. And he's just asking for drugs. That was my favorite bit of the movie for him.
And him trying to do martial arts.
Oh, yes. And his apartment, his fucking apartment is so gross.
Everything about him is gross.
Oh, dude. No,
he's fantastic. And look, I think the weakest of, it's funny, because the weakest of the boss's stories, the weakest of the reasons for wanting to kill these people is the Jennifer Aniston one.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't quite flesh out completely as to why this is so hard for him. You know what I mean? They kind of explain it, that he's on the registry and all this sort of stuff, and you know, but you buy it because she's doing such a good job.
Yeah, exactly. But, and you can buy the fact that she would never back down.
That's right. And with Kevin Spacey, I mean, we all know Kevin Spacey can do this. We've all seen Swimming with Sharks. We know that he's capable of this. The real surprise here is Colin Farrell. I mean, Colin Farrell just, like you said with Jennifer Aniston, he throws it to the wind. He basically
it's one of those great moments where you get those films where they just give it to this person, and it's probably the director or someone around the director or the casting agent has just known this person for a while and just seen the side of them occasionally.
Probably some party gag he did.
Exactly. Either that man or, you know, I would imagine Colin maybe, you know, devils a little into that sort of stuff. And maybe she's witnessed this. And she was like, you know what? You just got to play a role of that and given it to them. And it's just when you get those moments, especially with actors that are, you know, this is the pure, like, to me, this is the antidote for Alexander. Like, to me,
that's a good call. Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? It's like, I haven't really taken him seriously as an actor and I haven't enjoyed him in a film since that film.
No,
like,
and we get two this week.
Exactly. Both, well, that's what I mean. It's almost like he's pulled his pants up and, you know, kind of went, all right, look, I'm going to be serious now and actually just driven straight for a really good film. And this is exactly what we got with this. It's just intensely well acted, just mayhem.
Yeah.
And that's what I love. I mean, if you wanted to point anything, the storyline is the weakest part of this, but you just completely let it go because the actor's doing such a great job.
That's exactly right. And I think that's the thing to point out with this film, which is the fact that it, as a film, structurally, story-wise, and everything else, it's nonsense. It's just light fluff silliness. But the filmmaker was very smart and populated it with six really good actors,
yeah,
and then Jamie Foxx on top of that.
Exactly, exactly.
But the six key players in this populated all six roles with six people who you really go for.
Mm.
And you can buy everything they're saying, you can buy their storylines and everything else, and you just watch them have fun on screen.
Absolutely.
And if you didn't have those six, if you had weak links in there, it would have fallen apart. Mm. And they're all doing such a good job. They're all playing to their strengths. They're all having fun do it. And, I mean, stay for the end credits because there's outtakes in the end credits. And the outtakes are as funny as the stuff in the film.
Oh, absolutely. And a few of the things that they make mention to that are then used in the film.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's just like there are so many moments, and you can tell that this film is one of those films that is just incredibly, like, off the cuff.
You know what this is the antidote for? So the antidote for Bad Teacher.
Yeah.
All right, 'cause it just shows,
when you thought comedies couldn't be funny.
That's right. Yeah. And then so this comes along, and you go, thank God. Yeah. You know, thank God this is actually quite funny. No, I actually really enjoyed it. We don't tend to like to review straight up comedies on film, actually,
because they are subjective.
Comedy is incredibly subjective from beginning to end. What one person finds funny, somebody else isn't. I mean, humor is such a personal thing. But every now and again, a big one comes along where you have to like have a look at, and Horrible Bosses is one of those.
Well,
big
ones, I mean, it's this year's Hangover, and I mean, Hangover 2 wasn't a Hangover.
No.
Like it was the Hangover again, and because of that, it just fizzled. Like, it didn't fizzle box office wise, I'm sure, and all that sort of stuff. But everyone you talked to was like, "Yeah, it was all right. It was all right." But it wasn't that bam. You know,
it should have been called Hangover 2 TOO.
Yeah,
as in the Hangover as well, because it was just the same film.
Exactly.
Redone.
And it's funny because it's like it hit and it fizzled, and everybody kind of was a little saddened because we all wanted this year's big comedy. You know, the comedy that stays with you. And I mean, you get like one or two a year, and that's it. Comedies are a difficult thing to just make blockbuster comedies.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And this film is it. This film is just, you let it go for all its stupidity, you let it go for its relatively shit ending. I'm sorry, but the wrap up to this film is a bit like, oh, are you serious? And the car guy who helps them out at the end of the film, you're just like, that's just there because the whole
Charlie Day thing didn't wrap up well. I mean, you know, that whole his story didn't wrap up well.
Exactly. And it's one of those things. It's a bit like the end of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang for me, how they just have that little bit at the end and you're like, you didn't need this. You could have just ended it and that was it, but you had to put something on the end of it. And there is a few moments of this and this. It's far from perfect, but God damn if it isn't a good film.
Well, that's the thing. Look, it's far from a perfect film, but it's funny. And that's really what that's really what it comes down to with a comedy. Does it make you laugh? Did you enjoy the experience? We had fun watching it. And, you know, I laughed out loud, and that's a good sign for a comedy, you know?
Yeah.
It's something that I can't say that I did with Bad Teacher, and it's something that I didn't do a lot of during Hangover Part 2, so it was nice. The last time I've laughed this loud out loud was with Bridesmaids.
So
it was like, you know, so I think between Bridesmaids and this, we've got the two comedies of the year. And we'll see what happens in future. But at the moment, these are the two comedies of the year. No, I liked it. I liked it a lot. And I would recommend if you do like comedies, if you like Judd Apatow-style, grown-up, raunchy comedies, then this is the film for you. This is, you know, you go and have a look at it. You'll get a laugh out of it. And, yeah, watch it for no other reason, just to see a transformed Jennifer Aniston. You know, let's see what she can get up with. And Colin Farrell, man, the man rocks. What can I tell you? Yeah. So yeah, I do recommend it. I say go see it. It is worth having a look at. There are some, the biggest issues with this is probably screenplay, but I don't think they were too worried about it. I think what they did was they got a bunch of funny people together and said riff.
Yeah.
You know? And if they riff well, then you've got a comedy. You know? That's the Judd Apatow school of filmmaking. Really,
yeah. Yeah.
Put them together and riff.
Yeah.
The other film I saw this week, well, actually, I saw it last week. It opened this week, though, which was The Guard, which is also a comedy, but a very different kind of comedy.
Yeah.
This is The Guard is written and directed by John Michael McDonough. Now, what I found out about him was he's actually the brother of the guy who directed In Bruges. So it's that style of comedy. It's that kind of dark. It's funny, but it's also kind of tragic in some ways. And The Guard is really good. It's very clever. Let's have a look here. We'll say The Guard is written and directed by John Michael McDonough. It stars Brendan Gleeson, Don Cheadle, David Wilmot, Liam Cunningham, Rory Keenan, Fionella Flanagan, and Mark Strong. And according to the synopsis from Element Pictures, who actually produced the film, it's being distributed by Paramount in this country, but the Element Pictures is a production company. It says, Sergeant Jerry Boyle is a small-town Irish cop with a confrontational personality, a subversive sense of humor, a dying mother, a fondness for prostitutes, and absolutely no interest whatsoever in the international cocaine smuggling ring that has brought straight-laced FBI agent Wendell Everett to his door. And that's basically it. So we'll have a look at the trailer real quick, and then I'll explain this a little bit in more detail.
Sergeant Jerry Boyle, cop shop.
Oh, was it a sheep or something? It's a lamb.
I mean, what would his parents think?
I've got some information about that murder last night.
What murder?
How many orders have you had in the last 24 hours?
Well, that's for us to know and you to find out.
Only wish I'd brought me handcuffs.
I don't think your mammy would be too pleased about that now.
You're to head in to attend a briefing from a fella who's over from the FBI.
Now, these men are highly dangerous. In the vicinity of $500 million worth of cocaine on board.
Yes, Sergeant.
I thought only black lads were drug dealers and Mexicans.
Apologize to the man.
Apologize for what?
For your racist slurs, for one thing.
I'm Irish, sir. Racism is part of my culture.
Only having a bit of fun, like. Don't mean nothing by it.
So I thought we might start by canvassing the neighborhood.
Chilly out, huh?
Sorry, you lost me at we.
And I was wondering if I could ask you a few questions.
Tafar Gorham Legendaris!
It was a Gaelic-speaking region. Did not teach you that at Langley?
How you doing, sir? Sir, Langley's the CIA, you idiot, not the FBI. No, I can't tell if you're really dumb or really smart.
You all right?
A milkshake headache.
Look at it, they're here.
You ever been shot before?
Yeah.
Does it hurt?
Did you grow up in the projects? No, I did not grow up in the projects. But I actually come from a very privileged background. Some in the Hamptons, skiing in Aspen.
Thought black people you couldn't ski. Or is that swimming?
Trailer alone is awesome.
This film is a little diamond in the rough. Let me tell you, I had no idea what to expect when I went to see this film.
You know what I love about it? Because when you say racist, I always think of like heavy confrontation, like sort of headbutting. But what I love about it is you can see it even in the trailer there. It's like it's not so much a form of racism, it's just a complete absence of understanding.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, you can see it in that last bit where he just looks at him and he's like, I thought black people couldn't ski. And of course, at this stage, I would imagine he's got over the fact that, you know, like he's aware that these people are just going to be racist the whole time.
Don Cheadle never gets over it.
Yeah.
That scene is actually relatively early in the film.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing is, I mean, these remarks and comments keep coming out of Brendan Gleeson's mouth all the way through it. And that's why there's that final line where he says, I can't tell whether you're really smart or just really dumb, right?
Yeah.
It's like, because, and there's a smile that comes over Brendan. And you see, and throughout the film, you start to realize that Brendan Gleeson probably isn't as dumb as, and the thing is, he very quietly just goes about doing his business. Mm. And whether or not he solves crimes and stuff is depending on whether or not they come and step in front of him.
You know? Right, yes, yeah.
You know, and he does solve crimes because it's a very small town. We're talking about a really small town, right?
Yeah.
And the scene where that woman comes out speaking Gaelic is brilliant because basically Don Cheadle gives up with him because he says, we've got to go door to door. And he goes, no, tomorrow's my day off. And he goes, what do you mean it's your day off? We've got drug deals. He goes, no, it's my day off. I've already planned it. And so basically Brendan Gleeson just goes off to hang out with the prostitutes because it's his day off. And so Don Cheadle decides to take it upon himself to go around door to door. And everybody speaks Gaelic.
Yeah.
And it's all subtitled and nobody will give him time of day. And it's one of the funniest scenes in the whole film because the subtitles are hysterical because even in Gaelic, they're all completely racist to him. and he doesn't know, of course, because he can't speak Gaelic. And there's a line a little bit later on from Brendan Gleeson where he says, oh, no, they all speak English. And it's like, you know, it's like they just don't want to talk to Don Cheadle. You know, it's like, it's just magnificent. And then you've got Mark Strong as an English guy who works as, there's a trio of drug dealers who are basically doing this drug, this planned cocaine drop, which is why Don Cheadle is there. And he can't stand the country and he can't stand the Irish and he can't stand it. And he's like, all the way through it, he's like, and he hates Americanisms and stuff like that. And all the way through it, he's like, bloody hell, why are we doing it? He's just grumpy throughout the entire thing because it's just like,
that's great. Mark Strong playing his best kind of thing.
Oh, it is. It's fantastic. And it's all about how Don Cheadle kind of has to come to terms with Brendan Gleeson, and Brendan Gleeson basically has to take responsibility at one point where it's about how it comes to a point where you go, okay, well, it's time to man up now, you know, and you've got to kind of protect your own stuff. Yeah. It's a really good film. It is what makes good Irish comedy work in that it is based on completely on all those quirky little characters. If you didn't have all the quirky little characters, it doesn't work. I've got a clip from it if you want to see this clip.
Yeah.
This is from right at the beginning of the film. This is when basically Brendan Gleeson first turns up at a crime scene and he's basically meeting his new partner for the first time as well. So he's never met this partner. This is another Irish guy. So this is before the whole FBI thing. This is just early on in the film. It's just one random crime scene.
Yeah.
It's very short. Have a look at this clip.
Should you,
Wait a minute, my clip is frozen. Why is my clip frozen? Try it again.
Give it a sec. Maybe it'll...
Sorry?
Maybe it'll click in if you just leave it.
Well, you can listen to the audio anyway. Yeah. Basically, we don't get the video for it, there's a guy who's shot in the head.
Oh, right.
And he's got a pot plant in his lap.
Right.
That's all you really need to know. Okay, so...
Should you be removing those?
From the Bible, looks like. I knew it'd be a fucking religious angle. He was a good-looking lad. Lovely lips. The significance of the pot plant has me somewhat perplexed.
Maybe it's genus is a clue?
Oh, genus, huh? Fancy. What the hell are you doing?
I have the gift. Nobody tell you. Clairvoyant-like. Never interfered with the corpse before, no? It's great gas.
And now listen, I don't think you should be putting...
I'm only messing with you, lighten up, for fuck's sake.
Well, you don't think that was appropriate?
I'll just fuck off to America with your appropriate fucking Barack Obama.
And there we go.
And there we go. Sorry about the frozen clip for our audio, but for our video viewers, but the audio is there. Basically, what he's doing when he says, I don't think it's appropriate, is he's actually groping the guy's balls, the corpse's balls.
Mm.
And the guy's going, what are you doing? He goes, don't anybody tell you, I'm psychic. Yeah, so it's a bent little film. It's very funny. And it's just so casual. It never, if you hear the pace of that clip, it never changes pace.
Mm.
It just kind of drifts through.
Yeah.
But it's like a really, really pleasant blanket that you want to just wrap yourself up in. It's a really good film.
I like that. You should send that to Way Too Billy.
I think so. Yeah. Well worth having to have a look at. It's open now and well worth seeing. So, in fact, I would actually say if you're only going to see one film this weekend, go see The Guard rather than Horrible Bosses. Mm. But both films are worth having a look at. And I really, really can't wait for you to see The Guard. And we'll come back to a little bit
Absolutely.
More. Absolutely. Let's go on to a little bit of entertainment news. I'm trying to move forward because I think our list of five is going to be quite long today. But we got to move into our entertainment news section really quickly and basically say they never learn. ever learn. And that is piracy, according to torrent statistics, has now doubled on Fox content since Fox put in delays on putting stuff out to Hulu. Did they not see that coming? I'm sorry. One of the things we have talked about on this show for time and time again is the fact that you can cut down piracy by making it available. You make it available, people will watch it through legitimate channels. What Fox has done is they've decided they want to create an unnatural window and basically delay releasing their product onto Hulu in America 2 weeks after it's aired. So, of course, everybody just went and torrented it.
Mm.
They're not going to wait 2 weeks. They want to see it now.
So how is Fox taking that?
Nah, we don't know yet. And I'm sure Fox is blaming everybody but themselves.
Mm.
But this is just, academic? It is so, non-academic is not the right word. It's so predictable.
Yeah.
That's a good word. So predictable that this would occur. And we've said it so often, and you can actually look, films that have had day and date release around the world are pirated less than films that don't, right? Television shows that are released fast-tracked around the world have less piracy than shows that don't.
This sort of stuff is what pisses me off, man, because it's like nothing's changed, and I actually find it incredibly insulting when people take this sort of a concept and delay things or whatever. Mm. It's like TV is for us. Okay, it is for the user at the other end, and the user at the other end wants to watch it, just like we used to on TV, just like we used to record to a video and then give to a friend of ours, or record the series so that we could watch it later. This is not new. This is just the digital version of what we've been doing since the birth of this stuff.
Pretty much.
Since the first time we got a recording device. Now, if you're going to turn around and do this sort of stuff, you bring it on yourself. And I hope Fox yells and kicks and screams because they have for that freaking long. They can do it as long as they want.
Their argument was if they delay the release to Hulu, then more people will watch it on TV. But that's not what happens.
Okay. Can I also start by explaining to people, because maybe you missed this somewhere along the way, TV is not where people watch TV anymore. People watch TV from their computers.
Pretty much. It's getting that way. All right, you want some statistics on this?
Go.
According to Torrent Freak, it said the number of downloads in the U.S. for the most recent Hell's Kitchen rose 114% compared to the download levels of the previous three episodes. MasterChef saw a whopping 189% increase in the U.S. downloads. These are all because these were delayed going to Hulu. So people just downloaded them. They went to the best source they had, which was BitTorrent. And all I can say is it serves you right, Fox.
Yeah.
That's all I can say.
Exactly.
So and all I can say is you didn't learn a thing over the last few years. It's just ridiculous. The other piece of news, we have very little in the way of news. It's actually been a very quiet news week. Very quiet news cycle this week.
It's fine with me.
But we do have a new trailer out.
I really want to see this.
Johnny Depp played a Hunter S. Thompson analog in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. To great effect.
Love that film. One of my favorite films.
Even though this new film is not Terry Gilliam, he is back basically playing a Hunter S. Thompson analog. The Rum Diaries is finally coming out. And a trailer was released this week.
Didn't I talk about this like 3 or 4 weeks ago, saying I think this film's just disappeared? Like, what happened to it? There you go.
And
people listen to me, man.
And now the trailer is coming out. So let's have a look at it, and then we can talk about it. So this is the first trailer. Now, unfortunately, the quality of the trailer isn't as super as it could be because it's only really been shown on ET at this point. We haven't got a high-def version of it out yet. But here's what was shown on Entertainment Tonight.
Puerto Rico. I came down here looking for a story.
It's called journalism.
Your resume, yeah?
Don't look so anxious. I wouldn't have paid for your hotel if I hadn't already hired you. But I found the strangest paradise on earth.
Hey, you made it.
But you said you had a TV.
The guy across the alley has a TV. I have binoculars.
It's where your secrets come to dance.
Don't notice the wig.
Whoa. And the voodoo works its magic.
And if the drinking doesn't get you into trouble,
how does anybody drink 161 miniatures?
Are they not complimentary?
The women definitely will.
I thought maybe you were a mermaid.
I'm from Connecticut.
Stay away from her. She's Anderson's fiance.
She's sunbathed in the nude. Take it like two
maracas. She's a sweet little beauty.
I was looking at his boat.
We've all been down on her. It's a wonderful experience.
Now, all this might sound like some crazed hallucination, but it's all true. I think.
This place is a sea of money, Paul. And there's people like me who know how to get it out.
Isn't that kind of thing illegal?
It's an inappropriate comment.
We'd nail this bastard to his own front door.
I got a story for you. I'm going after him.
Are you out of your mind?
I bet. You scream before I do.
No such thing as 470 proof alcohol.
What we do is private.
Front seat's gone.
I've got a brilliant idea.
Try and look normal.
I don't think it needs to be said that I am totally in on that.
It doesn't look quite as abstract as Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, but I love when they're driving the car and he's sitting on the guy's lap and he's just trying to look normal.
I don't think it's going to have quite the psychedelicness of...
No, except there's that one shot with the guy's tongue coming out that looks kind
of... Oh, absolutely. And look, there'll be moments of that because, you know, Hunter S. Thompson's never one to say no to something.
No.
But at the same time, like, I think you're still going to have the same sort of craziness. But I think, like, I mean, people often forget that Hunter S. Thompson was a very good writer. And it's like... And people can fucking argue with me all you want. I love this man so much, like my entire life. And I mean, like the every anniversary, if it's showing, we'll go see Gonzo at a cinema, that sort of stuff. It's like, you know, I adore this man.
Have you ever seen Where the Buffalo Roam with Bill Murray?
No.
That's Bill Murray doing the Hunter S. Thompson analog. It's good. It's good. It's very different.
Yeah. But I just love what they do with his character, and seeing Johnny Depp just do the voice again makes me just so happy. Just to see that happening.
I love that line where he says, how could you possibly drink 100 and whatever it was miniatures? He goes, weren't they complimentary?
Yeah, but that's so Hunter. Like that's so it's sort of I just assumed, and I love it, man. I'm absolutely dying to see that film and have be for ages. So it'll be great.
Just in reference to our last story, by the way, Callison that said piracy in Australia would all but disappear if we had Netflix/Hulu.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah, I would completely go somewhere and watch it from a site if.
Although,
yeah.
If Australia had Netflix or Hulu, it would be Australian Netflix and Australian Hulu, which probably wouldn't have the same content, and we'd be back to square one. So what exactly. we need to have American Netflix and American Hulu.
Yep.
But that's a whole different issue. So no, and we're back to square one again. So look, I will go see that. I think that looks like a lot of fun. And I love the fact that, what's his name, isn't it? Aaron Eckhart. I had no idea he was in it. So no, it looks good. I want to see that. Okay, let's move on to our list of five. And we've given ourselves lots of time for this because I think we've got...
It's going to be a big one. I got it waiting and ready to go.
Okay, this week, our list of five. Five actors, actresses, directors you would watch no matter what. And I have basically written as a blurb. We'll say there are certain actors, actresses, and directors that just speak to you. And no matter what they make, good or bad, you will watch it.
Yeah.
These are five of ours.
Yeah.
And as usual, we should put the disclaimer that, as usual, these are not necessarily a top five list. These are just lists of five that we love.
Yep, okay? Absolutely.
Josh and I have real trouble doing top fives because top fives change all the time. So at this very moment in time, these are the five.
Okay, cool.
All right. So I'm going to say...
Well, let's start before we break down the lists themselves because we unfortunately made it a little too open, so we both have very different lists. Yeah. So let's break down so that people understand just what our lists are about.
Okay.
So with mine, my list are actually the actors, so five actors that I would watch in anything. But as a sort of almost personal side note, I've also taken five more recently famous, so sort of around, you know, sort of between 90s and now, they really started to flag on people's lists.
Very good. Okay. And on my list, because I originally trained as a filmmaker, I have always been drawn to the filmmakers and the people behind the scenes. I actually thought about doing actors and stuff, and it actually occurred to me that I don't think there are any actors or actresses that I would watch in anything. Yeah. There are lots that I love, but they're not the huge draw card for me. However, when I did this list, I also kind of made a point of saying that these are all directors, so all five of mine are directors, and all five of them are currently working. Okay, because what the idea here of this list is that I would watch them do anything, so they have to still be currently working.
Yeah,
there we go. Because I immediately started thinking, well, there's Hitchcock and there's this and that, but they're not working anymore.
No.
All right, so mine are all currently working.
Currently working directors. Okay, cool.
All right, so my number five is John Carpenter. Now, before we go any further, Mike from Canada, when you do this list, none of these films count towards the vault because we're actually talking about people.
Yeah.
Okay. So these are, don't worry about the films, just the list the people. Okay.
Yep.
My number five is John Carpenter. John Carpenter I've been a particular fan of for a long time. And I wrote a little blurb for each one. So we'll have a look here. And I said, after Assault on Precinct 13, Halloween and The Thing, and Escape from New York, I could watch John Carpenter direct The Phone Book. It doesn't matter that he hasn't made a really good film in a decade. I still watch anything that he makes. And that's the valid point here, is the fact that even though he hasn't had a good film sometime, he has so much cachet with me that I keep waiting for that next that next.
You just want to see what he used to do come back out.
Absolutely. And I have watched his first half dozen films more times than probably any other filmmaker. So
nice.
And that gives you an idea that he's number five. So but yeah, no, John Carpenter is a personal favorite of mine.
Nice.
You're number five.
You have, remember, we said we were going to have particular films.
Oh, well, that's why I listed the films there. So I said, for me, the three films that were really the lock, well, the four films for him
you
that were the
lock. You actually give those.
I did. I said Assault and Precinct 13, Halloween.
Oh, right, right, because they were in the thing.
Yeah, they're in my blurb.
Yeah, blurb. Whatever. Okay. Yeah, number five on my list. This guy is walking, treading a very fine line right now because he made a very standout performance in one particular film very recently, which you will know, and we both really loved. And that shot him to fandom. Now, he's walking a fine line right now because he's been picked up by the indie crowd and he's become one of the indie kids.
Ooh, I'm curious,
now,
yeah.
The unfortunate truth is that, you know, if he continues down that path, he will become very much like Diablo Cody or anything like that, where you can fast talk all you want. You bore the shit out of me after I've seen the same thing six or seven times. This kid seems to have a range, which is why I'm keeping him at the top of my list. And if his name is mentioned on a film right now, I will just go see it just to see where he can go.
I'm curious.
And, it's Jesse Eisenberg. And of course, like we saw him in Social Network and that was the dynamite explosion for pretty much the whole world. We saw this kid act as a really good role. We saw him play a dynamic range of different roles in that film, like different sort of personalities in itself. He did a really great job with that. My second film would be Zombieland. We love it because it was right at the height of that real kind of power that zombies had, where they would just, the word just made millions of dollars, didn't matter what you put it on. But it was done by fans for fans, and it was funny and it was humorous and it went to a lot of interesting places. Jesse Eisenberg basically played Jesse Eisenberg, though, in that film, which is why I started to worry, because the other film, Adventureland, was very much a similar kind of thing. It was just a typical fucking film like that. But
I thought he was good in it, though.
Yeah, and that's fine. And that's the thing. He is really good, and I'm also really looking forward to him in 30 minutes or less.
30 minutes or less, yeah.
And like his role in that seems to be a little bit less Jesse Eisenberg-ish. He has a fucking shit ton of films currently being filmed, and I will watch him in any one of those when they come out.
Very cool. You know, I actually, he's a career that I'm watching at the moment. I'm very curious to see where he goes. My number four is another director, surprise, surprise. And I'm going to say Ridley Scott. And I'm going to say, with a background in advertising,
he kind of right now is kind of on the high end of that.
He is, and this is, I mean, we look at, we go with a background in advertising. Scott's visual eye is undeniable, and you look at the triple headed 1, 2, 3 films of his, which were The Duelists, Alien and Blade Runner. Mm. And basically at that point you go, you got me. I will watch anything you produce. And even when he doesn't strike gold, when you look at things like A Good Year or Robin Hood and you go, those aren't so good, you then weigh that up against stuff like Gladiator, Thelma and Louise, Legend, or Kingdom of Heaven, and you go, your good outweighs your bad. And I can't stop myself from going to see his films. And if I were to pick three films of his, it is definitely Blade Runner, Alien, and Legend. Which are the three films, because I mean, Legend is just visually spectacular. It's not a great film, but it's visually spectacular, you know? And you look at those three films and you go, put those three films on anything and I will always watch those, and I will watch anything that he produces.
Yeah.
You know, I went to see Robin Hood, even though everybody said it was crap, because it's Ridley Scott, you know?
No, fair enough.
I will go see Prometheus and I will go see his Blade Runner and, you know, and I'll keep watching his films because he is Ridley Scott and so much more talented than his brother.
Wait.
Your number four.
My number four is a man who I actually, when I first saw him on the front cover of a DVD box, actually thought, this man was Gary Oldman. Now, since then, he is not. He is Asian. And
he's Asian?
You'd understand. You'd understand if you saw the film. Since then, I've actually developed the concept where I actually almost think of him as the Asian version of Gary Oldman. This guy plays very bizarre roles. He plays very erratic roles. He plays often difficult to watch roles. But the thing about him is he has this presence on screen that even if he's doing nothing, he is just terrifying to watch. And so far, we've seen him in only a few films that I would definitely go, that was amazing. But even the film that me and Celine very differ on, I think his performance is undeniable. And his name is Min-Sik Choi. And Min-Sik Choi, the three films I picked is Lady Vengeance, who he plays an absolutely bizarre character. Old Boy, which he is the lead for in that film. He's just, you can't stop watching him. He's mesmerizing. He's mesmerizing in the fight scenes he does. He's mesmerizing in his dialogue delivery. He's just a disgusting human being, and you can really sense that in him as a role, you know, as a role. And number three is I Saw the Devil. And this is probably the peak of his acting ability, where he actually plays a rapist, serial killer, psychopath. Like, this guy is just undeniably evil. But as the film goes on, one of the most amazing things about his performance is this man that follows him is trying to teach him that what he's doing is wrong. But as you go through the film, you realize he just has no concept of wrong. Like, and no matter what this guy does to him, he just can't figure out what he wants to do. And his frustration towards all the shit that happens to him is just so well acted. Like, at the end of the film, he just starts crying because he's just like, what do you want me to do? I just don't understand. And it's powerful, man. And it really works. And this man, no matter what he does from now on, I will see him in it.
I've really got to see Old Boy.
Yeah, you really do.
I really do have to see Old Boy.
Yeah.
I'll get to it. I really will.
Yep.
My number three is Martin Scorsese. I'm gonna give you the blurb on this, and I'm gonna say sometimes flawed.
Yeah.
Last Temptation of Christ, The Color of Money.
Sure.
Sometimes experimental, New York, and After Hours.
Yeah.
But always the work of a truly unique artist.
Yeah.
For me, highlights. This is the man that you will watch anything that he would direct because of Raging Bull, Taxi Driver, Goodfellas, Mean Streets, Cape Fear.
For sure.
Shall I keep going?
No, you don't have to. I completely get it.
Look, he is a frustrating filmmaker sometimes because, like, when I saw, as an example, I'm not the biggest fan of Casino because I look at Casino and I go, this is Goodfellas with a retread, you know? I can still see great work in there.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of New York, but I can see Scorsese in there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a huge fan of Last Temptation of Christ, but you can see Scorsese
in there. You know what, man? Even things like Shutter Island, like more recent films, it's like when I watch that film, I look at it and I just go, you know what? You guys can say whatever you want. That was brilliant because the reaction that film got was the same reaction you get from old Scorsese at the time. Mm. You know what? Everyone always does that. They're always like, nah, it was all right. It was okay. It wasn't that great a film. But when you rewatch it, when you sit down and put the time in to look at the visual style, the control, the acting.
A really good example of all this new film that he's got coming out called Hugo.
Yeah.
The trailer doesn't do a lot for me.
Mm.
And you sit there and you look at it and go, but it's Scorsese. I should be more interested in this. But when you start looking at that trailer, you go, you know what? It may not be my type of film, but you can really see Scorsese is going to invest himself in something.
And what? The thing that we will both always respect about Scorsese is he does it his way. There is no influence on his films.
No.
His films are start, finish, and everything in between his films.
Yeah.
And this is why there will always be a respect. If I don't like his film, I don't care. The man did it his way, and I respect that because that's what true art is.
Yeah, and if you really want to appreciate Scorsese, go back and look at his really early work, the one where he had little to no money. Go back and have a look at Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore or Mean Streets or even Taxi Driver, and you just sit there and go, this is the work of a master, and yet he wasn't at that point. He hadn't been around that long, but you could see that he knew what he was doing early on. Great filmmaker, and I will watch anything that he releases. There's no doubt.
Absolutely.
Your number three.
My number three is Leonardo DiCaprio. This man, always set in the background. I mean, we all hated him as the heartthrob as males because realistically we were seeing him act the same way that we would expect him to act. You know, like the teen heartthrob was playing the teen heartthrob role, but it's almost like I now look back on that and think this was kind of almost training of an actor who was trying to be as classically powerful as he could possibly be, you know, like learn how, to play any sort of role. And I think where we got to see him rebirth was kind of Catch Me If You Can, kind of an era where we started seeing a very different him.
Well, he got involved with Spielberg. He got involved with Edward Zwick. He got involved with Scorsese.
Exactly.
And it's like he was given masterclass acting classes. I agree with you. I think he has developed into a fine actor.
Yeah, but there were moments of it, like right back in the day. Like I actually think The Beach is an incredibly underrated film, and his performance in The Beach is really good. Like this guy really well portrayed what Danny Boyle is so good at portraying, which is a man sort of falling down.
Was he the kid in the De Niro film?
Yes.
What's that called?
I know what you mean.
Something about Boy's Life.
Boy's Life or something like that.
That was him, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, what's eating Gilbert Grape? I mean,
I hated him in Gilbert Grape, though.
Yep.
Yeah, I hated that film. Anyway, that's personal feeling. I just hated that film.
I liked him in that. But this is what I'm saying. It's like there are moments where I look at him and I go, you try to do different things.
I will say, I'll give Gilbert Grape one thing.
Yeah.
The reason I hated Gilbert Grape was because I found him so incredibly annoying, which is what he was meant to be.
Exactly.
So, in fact, he actually solved it.
Exactly. You know? And I mean, this is the thing. I mean, when I look at that, I try and look at it as a film, and it's quite heart-wrenching, and it's, really weird. But, if you look at him as an actor, remove everything else out of that film, it's like he did the role and then went on to be one of the most attractive men in Hollywood.
He hit a lull in his career, not financially, because the films all made money, but he hit a lull in his career when he bought into the pretty boy thing.
Exactly.
So I think the lull in his career was Romeo and Juliet and Titanic.
Absolutely.
And he came out of that. And he.
Yep. And look, I mean, the beard helped.
The beard helped.
The little beard thing was kind of him saying, I'm a man now, I've grown up. And I mean, like, they are the two other movies on my thing. I mean, The Departed took us all by surprise. Mm-hmm. Like, he was. And he was much better than just a decent film, stance in that he was really powerful. And then in Blood Diamond, again, where he has some deliveries in that film, which are staggering, like really, really solid roles, solid speeches. And then also just some of the moments, like when he has that conversation with in the bush where he's carving up the boar.
Yeah.
He's actually scary, and you never thought about this about the kid that was the hard throb you just wanted to punch. And from now until he fucks up again, he is on my list. Any film he makes, I will go see.
Yep, absolutely. Especially with his most recent, Inception and Shutter Island.
Yeah,
he's on a roll.
Dude, I have openly said that I think Shutter Island is an amazing film, and I think he was amazing in it. And anybody that wants to argue, feel free. You know where my email address is.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
My number two is the 1-2 punch of Joel and Ethan Coen.
Can't really separate them.
No, you can't. They always work together. They're always together in everything that they do. And I've said with screwball comedies like Raising Arizona and The Big Lebowski, which I actually watched again last night, biting art house films like Barton Fink and A Serious Man, and dark thrillers like No Country for Old Men and Blood Simple, the Coens have proven that they can direct anything. And I will, watch it. And I think especially with the last couple of years with True Grit, A Simple Man, these boys can do anything. There is nothing that they could direct that I wouldn't want to go see.
Yeah.
They could say, we're going to make a kids film next, and I'll be first in line. Absolutely first in line. Yep. But I think if I was going to say, from me personally, as like a fan of the Coens, Miller's Crossing, Barton Fink, and probably Big Lebowski would be the three films where I just go, that's the Coens, you know, in every way. So, but yes, they're fantastic directors. Your number two.
Number two is Sam Rockwell. Sam Rockwell.
I'm there with you.
Like Sam Rockwell is just unmissable. Charlie's Angels would be one of the first times I kind of looked at him, and I was just like, who was that guy? Like, it was just out of nowhere, and he just stood out above that film. He was in that film, but he was so much better than it.
Oh, yeah.
And I just looked at it and I went, I have to find this guy. I have to just find out what else he's done. And I went and found and watched Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, which became one of my favorite films of the time. And I've watched that DVD more times than I care to admit. He's on a different plane.
Let's not forget Galaxy Quest.
And again, I mean, but this is the thing. I
love that film.
Like, he's just everywhere in these films.
You
but...
have a last name. Do I? Do I?
But, like, that's the thing I love about it. Even in that film, he's better than that. Like, there is a chance for this man to eventually become, like, one of the greats. Like, this generation's greats. Because this guy is always just phoning it in. Even, like, his performances are fantastic. But when we see this guy truly smash a role, he is just absolutely unbearable. You can't turn away.
Unmissable
is the word I'm looking for.
That's the word I'm looking for. And I think the film that you're thinking of here is Moon.
And that's the number one on my list. Absolutely. It's like when you watch this man play against himself, and especially watch the DVDs, and you watch the fact that he did these takes one after the other, literally with a piece of tape on the ground. He's playing to himself with less than a second's knowledge, with very little sort of thing. Like, there may have been a small video, I think, at the side where he'd occasionally watch what he said just to get ahead, and then bam, straight in, doom, does it again. Completely different role, completely different things. We have actors and actresses out there that can't even get single lines. This guy's remembering two lots to three lots of dialogue and playing it against himself.
Yeah.
Like, as an actor, that is the definition of power.
I want to reiterate this one more time. If you have not seen Moon yet, what are you waiting for? Go see this film. Absolutely. This is a brilliant movie.
Yeah. Okay. Number one.
My number one. I don't think there is any surprise here.
Yeah.
He had me with Jaws, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and Raiders of the Lost Ark. Then we add E.T., The Color Purple, Empire of the Sun, Jurassic Park, Schindler's List, and many, many, many others.
Yeah.
My number one is Steven Spielberg. There is the man is my favorite filmmaker. He's my idol. He's my star. I mean, this is a man who, even when he goes off the rails and does something like Hook or 1941, who cares? You still see it for what it is that he's trying to achieve with it, and you go on. Minority Report, as we've had so many discussions about, failed or not, it's different.
Yeah.
It's unique. It's something that he was trying, you know? Yeah. And I love that about him. I love the fact that he's always experimenting. He's always trying to do something. And he is probably one of the fastest, most competent filmmakers.
Yeah.
In the business today.
Yeah.
Whether you like his topic matter or not,
yeah.
He's no Scorsese in the sense of going into those dark places, but he is supremely capable of putting together a film. Steven Spielberg, number one, all the way.
All right.
All the way.
Cool.
You're number one.
Look, I have to say this like live on air, man, because it's very important to me. My number one is a person that you know very little about, and it saddens me every time we talk because you're missing out on what is one of our generation's greatest actors, and anything this man touches I'm sold. I don't care how much money it will cost, how much money I will have to do to see these films. I will see anything he will do. And I've just found out that he is currently working on a project, a musical project with one of my favorite current rap artists, Lucy Liu himself, and someone else that you don't know. But he's created a super band. I will buy tickets to that show before it even
enters.
Idris Elba. Idris Elba.
I've seen him in a few films.
No. But like his power is in really his TV. I saw him in Thor, and it was good to see. Thor proved something to me, and it goes on my list because Thor proved to me that he's down with trying things that aren't really his thing. Like, Thor showed me that he has the power to do a film that may be a little
because and control the Bifrost.
But the man, by doing that, shows me that because he's always kind of playing not the same role, but he's always playing a particular characters, right, and they're from the same kind of world, even though they're very different. That showed me that he can just jump out and do something wild, like him playing
Heimdall.
Heimdall, yeah. And just watching him play that role, and I was like, there we go. Yep, that's proof that you can step outside that. But The Wire is the big one. Anyone that's seen The Wire will know him as Stringer Bell, and this character starts out as what you would imagine a ruthless drug dealer, and as you go through, you find out the levels of intelligence this man has and the fact that he's doing business courses and all this sort of stuff, and by the end of the series, he is just undeniably powerful. And then to see him get his own shot in a series called Luther and just watch him play a cop who is borderlining being a criminal mastermind with just absolute rage issues, like this man is a firecracker. I've literally found myself sitting in a mall on an iPhone and just being completely taken and absorbing what I'm watching without even thinking about things around me. He is just that good. Like, just him doing a speech in a room will just leave you absolutely without breath. And you have to get into this man.
I do. Look, I have to watch Luther, and I do have to watch The Wire. I've been putting The Wire
season two's out now. Just saying.
Of Luther.
Yes.
Yeah. I've seen The Wire so often at JB on special. I keep thinking, I really must pick that up. I must watch that. And I will. I promise I will. I know everybody raves about The Wire.
So. It's like there aren't many TV series where I would use this, but when I got to the end of season one, it's tear-jerking. And it's not even emotional. Like, it's not a, like, people are dead or anything like that. It's just the way that they explain it and what happens at the end of season one and everybody doing the right thing and being fucked for it is just, you're just like, oh man, that's just so real life. Like, it's just so real life and it's so powerful. So yeah, everybody should watch it.
Fantastic. All right. I have a couple of honorary mentions. Couple that are dead. I didn't put them on the list, but I mean,
Hitchcock
is somebody I would basically watch. Right. Do anything.
Yeah.
Frank Capra and Billy Wilder, two other directors who I would basically watch do anything, and two other directors who are still alive and working. They were actually brought up by my son, and I went, yeah, I probably would watch them do anything, but they're not as high on the list as the ones I mentioned. And that would be James Cameron and Peter Jackson.
Yeah, James Cameron's a bit hit and miss with me. Like, he has had a few films that have just let me really flat.
Yeah, you'll still go to the cinema and see everything he directs, though. Mm. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that's what this list comes down to. Will you go to the cinema?
Actually, you know what? No, I'd actually say I wouldn't, because things like Sanctum, no interest.
But he didn't direct it.
What was the other one he did direct, though? The one to Something of the Deep?
Oh, the documentaries.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good point, because I didn't see those.
Exactly, so and that's what I'm saying. There are things that you look at and you're like, yeah, I'm sure it's good, but I'm still not going to
put it. Yeah, because we only think of his narrative films, but he actually made three documentaries or something like that. Yeah, that's true. I saw his Titanic one, which was very good, but I didn't see the Mysteries of the Abyss or Deeps of the Abyss or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
Interesting, yeah. No, that, yeah. And
that's what I'm saying. It's like he is not definingly powerful to the point.
And
you know what it is? It's the fact that there are very few of his films that have depth.
Like, I don't think a lot of his films have
exactly,
depth.
Exactly, that's what I mean. It's like films, even my favorite Cameron films are all relatively weak when it comes to depth.
Yeah, you watch Cameron for spectacle, you know?
Exactly.
That's really what it comes down to. And Peter Jackson, I just don't think has the innings yet, to use a cricket term. I have seen everything that Jackson has made.
Yeah.
And you look at it and go, with the exception of the Lord of the Rings films, which are a stand by themselves thing, not all of his films are for everyone.
Yeah.
His early horror stuff and Meet the Feebles and stuff, not everybody's going to get into this stuff, you know? And yes, I've seen them all and I really like him. And he's getting to a point where, yeah, I'd probably see just about anything Peter Jackson made. But he's not quite in the same league as a Steven Spielberg.
You know what, though? I think we'd still question it. Like, with any of these
people.
Well,
Lovely Bones. We had to drag ourselves to Lovely Bones. And it turned out to be shit. You know what I mean? Sorry, I know you liked it. But, but the point is that it turned out to be not the masterpiece that everybody would hope it was going to be.
It was definitely different. And this is what I'm saying. It's like they definitely don't fall on that list for me, because the same reason that there are plenty of actors that I would go see almost anything that I'd watch, but there are people right now that I wouldn't question.
That's right. That's the key. You don't even think twice about this list.
Yeah.
There's like, actually one other person.
I just trust them to be able to manage themselves well enough to pick their own films.
Yeah. Like, it's funny because there's another person who would have been on this list until probably the last 5 years or so, which was Francis Ford Coppola. I had seen just about everything Francis Ford Coppola has made. I love Coppola. I love the Godfather films. I love Apocalypse Now. I mean, I just love the man. But it's interesting because I was when I was doing this list, I thought, I haven't seen his last two films. And it's like, he doesn't have the same drawing power that he used to have.
It's this dynamic nature that whatever they touch, they're at least going to give you something that to walk away with. That's what it is to me. It's the fact that even if the film's shit, even if everything else is terrible, there's no storyline or whatever, with my actors, I would go to see it just to see their take on whatever personality they're trying to take. Or,
very true.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the same thing with your directors. It's like the people that no matter what they touch, even something like Minority Report, it's like I went and saw that and walked away with concepts for things like, there are weapons in Deus Ex that feel like they're borrowed straight from that world. And it's like their movie alone will at least affect everything around it. And those are the important points.
Yeah, I think so.
Cool.
All right, we have a little bit of feedback. We've moved feedback to the end of the show. We have a little bit of feedback today. We want to thank, basically, we also want to thank Zed, by the way, for giving us this list to talk about. He also wanted to bring up, though, he was the one who actually said we should watch that Gymkhana video.
Yeah.
Which you showed us during the break.
Ah, yes. Who was this?
This was Zed. This is how I saw it, because he sent through it on feedback. All right. We do have a feedback from Chris from Bris Vegas. We haven't heard from him in a while.
Yeah.
And he says, hi there, guys. I've been drowned in work lately, so I haven't been able to tune into the live show for a while, but hope to be able to do so today. I had the pleasure of seeing Rise of the Planet of the Apes today and thought I'd share my thoughts on the special effects, which were extraordinary.
Yeah.
It was the first time I have watched CGI characters in a film where after 5 minutes, I completely forgot that I was seeing computer generated.
Yeah.
They really did an amazing job on the CGI, and I sincerely hope that it ushers in a new era of digital effects in movies.
Yeah.
I took my 11-year-old daughter along to see it as well, and she loved it. Personally, I had very low expectations for the film overall, but I found it to be one of the best films I've seen all year.
Thank you.
So thank you, Chris, that it's we felt the same way. It's a fantastic film. I also have one from our friend David C. in Brunswick, who says, dear film, actually, no anti-3D rant today.
Okay. All right, he says, good.
Episode 142, you discussed Von Trier, that agent provocateur, and the fascination, frustration several of you have with him. I have not seen all his films, but his actions and films remind me of Alejandro Jodorowsky, the director of El Topo and The Holy Mountain, and his Panic movement. Both seem to me to be artists who want to shake up the establishment and make an unusual mark in the history of film. I mean, directors like John Waters and David Lynch have made an unusual mark on cinema, but do not want to, or at least do not seem to want to, shake up the establishment more than just carve in their own niche out.
Yeah.
Would you agree that through their films and quote-unquote movements, Panic and Dogma, which was the Von Trier movement, Jodorowsky and Von Trier have tried to shake up the cinema establishment? Australian animal films we didn't mention during the animal films one should have been Storm Boy and Long Weekend.
Yeah.
Granted, yes, we didn't think about those ones. Do I believe that they're trying to shake up the cinema establishment? Absolutely. I think that's the only thing that they try and do.
Exactly. And this is my problem with them as a thing. It's like, I understand. Like, I mean, I love art as a style, as a concept art, right? So the concept of taking something that makes us think, makes us take something away, anyone can universally look at, and we may not all have the same concept of what we see, but we
may not
also
all have the same reaction, but we all have a reaction.
Yeah. And it's like, I understand that, right? But where I find that line gets blurry is when people start making things that just don't make sense just to make people think. Like, it's not trying to make a statement as much as it is just being out
trying
there.
Trying to make a statement. That's exactly the point.
It's trying to
that's
make
right.
a
it's
statement.
Not trying,
exactly.
Yeah, it's not trying to say anything other than trying to be a statement in
yep.
itself. And that's what the problem I have with von Trier.
Exactly.
I'm not really familiar with Alessandro Jodorowsky's work. Mm. I haven't seen El Topo, although I've been told I should. But I do know von Trier. And yep. I know von Trier is there to basically make you look at him.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I object to him. Is the fact, and he's a frustrating filmmaker because he keeps coming up with these ideas, and I go, I really feel like I should watch you, but I don't want to. anyway, so yeah, the question is, do we think they're just trying to shake up the cinema establishment? Of course they are.
Yeah.
They're trying to shake up establishment in general. All right, episode 143 he has comments on as well. He says, Josh/Richard, sorry, yeah. I do not remember who, talked about seeing Red Dog. That was Richard. I have not seen it, but would recommend the director's previous film, Boxing Day, which I haven't seen that either. So thank you. We will have a look at that. Color films. Stretching the definition, says Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, Pink Floyd, The Wall, and The Thin Blue Line, the documentary about the police. I agree with The Thin Blue Line and Pink Floyd, The Wall. I think Willy Wonka might be stretching it just a little
chocolate
bit.
Is a...
Chocolate... Chocolate brown, yeah, you could get away with that. Yeah, chocolate brown.
There's not really a color called chocolate, though, is there?
There's a shade of brown.
Yeah,
brown,
it's a shade.
Yeah,
it's not a color. So no, sorry, that
yeah,
one's
Willy Wonka. I think you might be stretching it, but Pink Floyd, The Wall, absolutely, and Thin Blue Line. I forgot all about. That's a documentary I saw way long time ago. Yeah. Really like that.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, David C, for dropping that on. And you can rant about 3D anytime you want. We may not always agree with you, but you can rant anytime.
Yeah, for
you want.
Sure. Do whatever you want, man.
That's our feedback. That's our show.
That is our show, man.
agree or disagree with us, or you just have something to say, send your emails to feedback@filmmatch.com.
Or you just want to make a statement.
Or you just want to make a statement, absolutely. Or if you just want to rock establishment,
yeah.
Right? Send it to feedback@filmactually.com or drop us a voicemail, 0280113167. Get merchandise, join the fan page, follow us on Twitter, and I do suggest you do follow us on Twitter. Yeah. The Twitter handle for this show is @geekactually, all one word. Right. The reason why I say follow that or our Facebook fan page is because of how things are going to be messy for the next few weeks.
Exactly.
That's where you're going to get news, yeah. Okay? Or check the website regularly. But you can do all of that by going to geekactually.com. All of the addresses are there in the follow us link. Josh, how can we find out more about you, dude?
RawDLC.com is a gaming website. Head over there and check it out. There's plenty of gaming stuff and all sorts of things. There's also a weekend opinion about to go up in about 5 minutes, which is our favorite meshed games, so games that are genre crossovers. So feel free to jump over there and throw your 2 cents in. That would be great. And other than that, if you have an interest in hip-hop, head over to hiphopnetonline.com.
Hey, you remembered this week. Well done. Yeah. We also want to shout to a couple of our friends out there out in movie land. Charlie and Brad, they used to host the Movie Fancast. Remember that show? Well, that's gone. But you can follow them at reboundradio.com and their new podcast, Good Day Sir. Weekendronin.com is the home of the Real Junkies. Those boys, they still haven't got a new episode out yet. What's going on? Give me a new episode, damn it. REEL Junkies, find them on iTunes. They're a podcast like us. They like to review movies, but they like to drink while they do it. Josh Spencer, our cartoonist out there at attackninja.blogspot.com. Go check his work out. He's really, really, really talented. Now, we are going to close the show today with a track called Boyle Gets Dressed. It's from the soundtrack of The Guard. Now, the name of the group or person that created the soundtrack for The Guard is probably Irish, and there's probably some special Irish pronunciation to this, which I don't know.
Yeah.
But it is spelt Calexico. Okay, so, but I don't know. It's Irish, so it's probably pronounced some other way. But so this is the soundtrack to The Guard by Calexico, and this is a track called Boyle Gets Dressed. And without further ado, I want to say thank you to our chat room. Thank you, Josh. Thank you to our listeners. Anything else, Josh? Nope. Nothing else?
No.
In that case, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all. Well, we won't see you because we're not live next week, but we will talk to you in your ear belt, in your ear drums through a podcast next week.
All right.
All right. Bye, everybody.